Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now, the WMAL Fisher House Radiothon continues. Please support our wounded warriors and their families by calling in your contribution now. 888-294-8560. 888-294-8560.
105.9 FM, WMAL. What a fun day here on the second day of December. Thursday morning at 6:07. Thank you for being part of our program, and specifically thank you for being part of the 2021 105.9 FM WMAL Fisher House Radiothon. 888-294-8560. We are rolling along, and if you donate this morning, right now, our friends at Leonardo DRS will be doubling your donation. That's right. It's the Leonardo DRS Challenge. They match the first $50,000 in donations from you. And we just gave you a total in the end of the last hour. We're a little over $9,000. I know we can do better because I've done this before and we have done better. So let's get going here, Amber. But what do you got? You got a twinkle in your eyes. Who's there?
A little news here. Yeah. John from Accokeek, Maryland. I should know that. Well, John from Accokeek made a $1,000 donation.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And even better, it's in memory of Sergeant First Class Gloria Grazioso.
Thank you, John.
That's awesome.
And thank you, Sergeant, for Sergeant Grazioso, for your incredible service to our country. God bless you and your memory. That's fantastic. I love this day, and I love you all for donating so much to the Fisher House Radiothon. Please call at 888-294-8560. Let's get straight to Carrie Severino. She is a very busy woman right now, and rightly so. Of course, the president of the Judicial Crisis Network and a former clerk to Justice Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court. And listen, Carrie, I bookmarked your Twitter feed yesterday because you're one of those voices that I was watching closely in reaction to the arguments. And, well, what is your overall reaction?
I was thrilled hearing yesterday's argument because, you know, I have worked so hard and spent so much time looking at whether we have judges who are really going to be faithful to the text and of the Constitution, of the text of the laws, and not just responding to the political pressures or trying to channel their own political interests. And what I saw yesterday was a majority of the court, a solid majority, that realized that their main job as judges wasn't to be making policy decisions for the nation on this really hot button topic of abortion, but as Justice Kavanaugh put it, to be scrupulously neutral, to be staying out of that. And I think what we're going to see is the court recognizing that since the Constitution doesn't speak to abortion, that their job isn't to try to second guess what the best one size fits all solution for the nation is on this, but is to acknowledge that kind of in humility and say, okay, you know what, this is an issue that the Constitution left to the people and the states. And I think that's going to do a lot to heal some of that divisive politicization that goes around the court. And, you know, it's not going to end this issue. There's certainly going to still be a whole lot of debate about it, but it's going to move back where it belongs to our elected representatives in the state legislature.
I'm just wondering how optimistic I should be because I'm always nervous about this. I certainly never thought that Roe v. Wade would even be on the table in my lifetime. And now we're hearing these arguments and it sounds like the Supreme Court could be poised to overturn it. But what are the chances that they just uphold this abortion law and decide not to wade into the larger issue of Roe v. Wade?
Well, you know, I think if you had asked me that 18 months ago, I would have said, wow, it would have been a great step in the right direction of getting back to the constitutional understanding here if they even just did uphold simply Mississippi's law. But I think what we see now, again, is we have a clear majority. What I heard yesterday was five justices who sounded like this is definitely that was definitely their understanding of the law, and probably Chief Justice Roberts as well, which would make six. Now, look, it's very hard to make guarantees of any sort based on simply oral arguments. And even if the justices were there yesterday, there's absolutely room. We have 6 months for them to change their mind. And we know that in previous cases, that's something the justices have done. So we can't make really clear guarantees, but I'm personally quite optimistic seeing or having heard yesterday's arguments.
Carrie Severino is our guest with Judicial Network, Judicial Crisis Network, and also, by the way, co-wrote the number one national bestseller with Molly Hemingway, Justice on Trial, which really explored everything that went on with the Kavanaugh confirmations. And so let's turn to Justice Kavanaugh. A lot of people were hanging on every single word of his questions, and I'm interested in your reaction. I frankly, when he said, listen, this boils down to, you know, there are two rights here, the rights of the woman involved and the rights of the baby, and at some point you got to choose. That really is what this, that's the whole ball game here, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what makes this so different from all of these other types of rights that got discussed yesterday. This is something that the alleged constitutional right I can think of that gives someone the ability to end another human life. And that makes it very different. So this isn't just, we're not just talking about an abstract thing. That's why it's such a controversial topic. And there are very important concerns that people are trying to balance in abortion regulations, and that's exactly why the Supreme Court should be staying out of it, and that's because they are not equipped to make those balancing questions. And I thought Justice Kavanaugh clarified that very well. He also had great comments about how the states are the right place for this, and then also about stare decisis, about the idea that the court should follow decisions that it knows is wrong,
yeah,
and that it believes is wrong, but follow them anyway. And he had just a litany that he was able to recite of, you know, that we do this all the time, and actually some of our most well-known and high-profile decisions have been ones that overturned previous erroneous precedent. And the one that got a lot of talk yesterday was particularly Brown versus Board of Education, that overturned the erroneous decision, Plessy versus Ferguson, that said that separate but equal was just fine, even though we have a 14th Amendment that says we have to have equal protection of laws. That's okay. We can have black water fountains and white water fountains, no problem. That was wrong. The Supreme Court overturned it. When we have a grievously wrong decision like that, they have to overturn it.
Larry, you pointed this out to me, and I was just reading about it, and I was struck by this too. Amy Coney Barrett, sitting on the Supreme Court,
yeah,
she has seven children, two of whom are adopted, and they were arguing yesterday about abortion being a burden to a woman's career.
Yeah,
in front of her. I mean, Barry, I can imagine a lot of people watching that.
Imagine what Amy Coney Barrett could achieve if she hadn't had those seven kids dragging her down, Carrie.
Yeah, it's a real drag on her career there, clearly. She could have been all nine Supreme Court justices if she hadn't had all that extra stuff.
Or emperor of the world, yeah.
Exactly. And she had some great comments on adoption, too, which I kept on thinking, oh, my gosh, this is coming from a woman who herself has intimate experience with this, obviously, because she talked about state safe haven laws, saying, yeah, yes, there was this concern in 1973 that a woman might not be able to care for a child, and what would she do? You know, this is something that's going to impact her for the rest of her life. But now all 50 states have laws where if a woman realizes, you know, after birth, there's just no way I can do this, or realizes ahead of time, but decides to carry the child to term, she has 48 hours that where she can relinquish the child to the state, no questions asked, and then they will help find an adoptive family for that child. You kind of get the idea. Amy Barrett's like, hey, I will be up there, you know, helping this. And I think there's so many people to say, you know, we want to be able to help women,
yes,
who are in these crisis pregnancies. Yes. We recognize that. So this is the only solution, isn't to have a national, you know, requiring abortion to be legal up until the moment of birth.
I got to tell you, Carrie, you're making me way too optimistic here. Literally, the hair is standing up on the back of my neck thinking about these babies being born and handing over, being taken care of through adoption to families who are in desperate need to be parents and for multiple reasons can't be. I just, what a great moment that will be in this country after the 50 years we've been through. Real fast, we're out of time already, but do you expect the decision in June, or is there any possibility they could actually release their decision before then, since it's so anticipated?
Well, they certainly could, but I don't think any of our past experience shows it would be any time before the end of June, just because it's so controversial. It takes a long time at the court to hammer out the details of this decision, both the majority and the dissent. So
well,
I would keep this on your radar, but in June, at the end of June, is when we expect it.
Like Amber, we're trying not to be too optimistic, but I can hear the smile on your face, Carrie Severino. So thank you for all of the great work that you've done leading us to this point. And, well, let's see what happens. Carrie Severino,
yeah.
Judicial Crisis Network, thank you so much for being here.
You're listening to the WMAL Fisher House Radiothon. Call to donate 888-294-8560.
And we've got another great Army veteran holding on here to tell us how Fisher House helped him through his recovery. And we'll get to that in a quick moment, but I want to remind you the number is 888-294-8560 so you can donate and have it matched by Leonardo here on this kickoff of the Fisher House Radiothon. And apparently, Amber, I see that twinkle in your eye again.
I know, I got it again. Another great thing just came across my desk. Marianne from Alexandria donated $1,000.
Oh, Marianne, thank you so much.
And this is in memory of her husband, who was a veteran and sadly died from Agent Orange. So, Mary, thank you. Marianne, thank you so much.
Yeah, Vietnam vet. What a hero you were married to, and thank you for continuing his memory here. Do what you can. $1,000, phenomenal. $100, incredible. And all of it is matched this morning by our friends at Leonardo. 888-294-8560. Let's bring in Ben Breckheimer, Army veteran, and apparently quite the adventurer here. Let's hear first what happened. You also, Ben, apparently got hit with one of those diabolical IED devices. What happened? Where were you?
Yeah, I was in southeastern Afghanistan in Spin Boldak, and I was the rear vehicle in our convoy. And for whatever reason, driving, I was either too far to the left or too far to the right, maybe by like an inch from the vehicle in front of me, following their tracks. And unfortunately, I drove over a pressure plate, and it caused a blast to go off underneath me, and it did traumatic injuries to my lower legs, especially my lower right leg.
I want to cut to the chase here, so everyone knows the spoiler. You like climb mountains right now, right?
I do. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. So
clearly, the amazing recovery is just astounding and phenomenal. But it took a long time to get there, and it sounds like they basically had to reconstruct your leg here. Tell me about how long it took and how Fisher House helped you and your family.
Yeah, you nailed it. I was in a 4-year-long limb salvage recovery program, and that was just to be able to keep my leg, and I had to learn to walk and run again. And, you know, the Fisher House, in my time of need and my family's time of need, they stepped up right away and provided them and myself a place to stay as soon as I got discharged from the hospital. And just for them to ease that burden and provide lodging for us was a huge, huge relief to my family and I, because they had a lot on their plate, obviously, dealing with me. So that was more than an awesome feeling to know that they had my back. But then just seeing all the volunteers every day with a smile on their face, wanting to help you out in any way possible, was such an awesome feeling.
Yeah, that sense of community, I imagine, is really important when you're going through such a tough time. And Ben, you actually now work with the surgeon that saved your leg. Is that right? Tell us about that.
That is right. Yeah, wow. Dr. Joseph Hsu. I actually deployed with him for the first time in 2005 to Baghdad, Iraq, and worked with him. And then he found out that I was changing my job voluntarily to a cavalry scout. And he said, I hope I never see you on my operating room table. And lo and behold, 2009, I ended up on his operating room table. And he retired in 2013, and I got medically retired in 2013. And he said, if I ever needed a job, to come to Charlotte, North Carolina. And lo and behold, I work with him in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, that's an amazing story. Seriously, I mean, it would. You got to say that God works in incredible ways here, Ben.
And yeah, I'm very blessed.
Can you even imagine? Because I mean, you just detailed what kind of 4 years of very how many surgeries altogether for your leg?
I actually just counted recently, and it was well over 15.
Jeez. Wow. So can you even put yourself in a place where you can imagine what that might have been like if Fisher House hadn't been there to take care of all of the things, the meals, the lodging, in many cases, the travel for your family through all of those surgeries? I mean, what would that have been like without Fisher House?
You know, honestly, we'd probably still be recovering financially from that, because they would have had to come down as often as possible just to make sure I'm doing all right mentally and physically. So just to have that burden, financial burden, I think taken away would it would probably still impact us today if they hadn't.
Ben Breckheimer, he almost lost his leg in Afghanistan. He's now back, but he's back because of the incredible surgeons and the incredible technology that has advanced so much for injuries like this over the years, and certainly because Fisher House was there to help him and his family. Please honor his service and honor the work that he's done for our nation by giving whatever you can at 888-294-8560, 888-294-8560, especially when I hear this happens in Afghanistan, considering what happened this year. I think it's extra special, Ben, that we let you and all of your fellow Afghan vets know that we're never going to forget what you did for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry and Amber. It's an honor to talk to you guys.
888-294-8560. It's the Fisher House Radiothon here on WMAL. We continue here with our Fisher House Radiothon at 888-294-8560. There it is, Amber. You've got that look in your eye.
Remember that little Army-Navy challenge I put out?
Yes.
Well, we've got a new addition to the Go Navy pod.
All right.
Jim from Columbia, Maryland. $1,500.
$1,500.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You hear that, you soldiers? That's great. Go Navy, by the way. Look at this. Gene from Falls Church. God bless you, Gene. $2,000.
Whoa.
For the Fisher House Radiothon here. We're now at $18,716. Double your donation now, thanks to Leonardo. It's 6:30 on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Supporting our wounded warriors and their families. The Fisher House Radiothon continues on WMAL, a Cumulus Media station. News now. Now, the WMAL Fisher House Radiothon continues. Please support our wounded warriors and their families by calling in your contribution now. 888-294-8560. 888-294-8560.
105.9 FM, WMAL. It is the 2021 105.9 FM WMAL Fisher House Radiothon here, our annual tradition, 19 years going, by the way. And once again, this year, our friends at Leonardo DRS are helping us kick off the WMAL Fisher House Radiothon with their Leonardo DRS challenge. Every single donation that comes in this morning will be matched up to $50,000. But we got to get to that 50,000 mark. So please give whatever you can and get a little more bang for your buck, right? Double your donation at 888-294-8560. 888-294-8560. Coming up at 8:05, we'll talk to Tim Carney, Washington Examiner, give you the latest on redistricting plans out of Maryland. And at 8:35, the one and only Peter Ducey, White House correspondent for Fox News Channel. And, of course, the one and only Amber Athey is here, too. It's not a great week so far for the Biden administration, I would think, what with the variant and their reaction to it. And
their overreaction.
Way overreaction. The travel bans and an amazing combination of questions coming out of the White House yesterday that we'll talk to Peter Ducey about. But it also hasn't been a good week for Chris Cuomo. And let's share. He finally has spoken. He came out of his little hidey hole there after his resignation. When we talked about this yesterday, Amber, you mentioned that he has the Sirius XM podcast radio show or something. And how, I mean, I don't know. Who knows what his media arrangements are and what the contracts are. But if I'm CNN, I'm putting language in there that doesn't allow him to do other media when he's, you know, under disciplinary action.
Yeah.
But
I'm actually surprised they let him do it in the first place, because
right.
Usually when you have one of these hosting gigs, your network prevents you from going on other outlets.
Right. Well, but sometimes they come up with a partnership and they think, well,
maybe it
advances the brand, and so we'll let him go. So imagine this. CNN is a news outlet. CNN pays him millions and millions of dollars. They've suspended him. He finally makes his first public statement on another entity on Sirius XM. But be that as it may, here's what he had to say.
You know this already. It hurts to even say it. It's embarrassing. But I understand it. And I understand why some people feel the way they do about what I did. I've apologized in the past. I mean it. It's the last thing I ever wanted to do was compromise any of my colleagues and do anything but help. I know they have a process that they think is important. I respect that process. So I'm not going to talk about this any more than that. So for right now, let's just get after it. And there's plenty to do.
Let's get after it.
That's the name of his show. Did you know that?
It's his little fake little
catchphrase. Let's get after it.
Let's get after it.
I guess I'm like, let's get after it.
Right. Get after this.
Let's get after it.
So is that enough? You know, oh, it hurts. It's embarrassing. The last thing I ever wanted to do was to compromise any of my colleagues.
I love this, too. I understand why some people feel the way they do about what I did. That's like, I'm sorry if I offended you.
That's absolutely right? What it is. It's that sort of weaselly, squirrely language. And I'm guessing he's being advised by damage control people and PR people. But, I mean, Brian Stelter appeared yesterday, finally, as well. I love that when he comes on CNN and like, Wolf Blitzer will interview him as if he's a guest,
mm-hmm.
right? He's like, well, yeah, here, we're going right to the news source, Brian Stelter. He's on the payroll, and his job is to just be a flack for the company. But,
yeah, they call him, what, a media correspondent?
Yeah,
the chief media reporter?
Chief media reporter.
He's Jeff Zucker's spokesman. Come on.
Right. But he said he was speculating. As you say, and of course, anything that Brian Stelter says on the air at CNN has to be approved and given the stamp of approval by Jeff Zucker and the other executives there, right? And so you've got to think that they were fine with Brian saying this. Stelter goes out there and says, yeah, you know, he's on the bench right now is how they put it. He's on the bench.
Interesting.
And who knows? We might see him back, you know, next month. He might be back off the bench. So he's
just
already
a month.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's already floating the idea. And he said that, you know, CNN just needs to further investigate this. What is there to investigate? So what is it they could possibly learn here that other than, I guess, Chris Cuomo doing a Jussie Smollett saying, no, that's all fake. That's all a lie. Those text messages, those weren't me. That's the only excuse. Otherwise, they know, A, they've already acknowledged that he breached their policies and their journalistic standards. And now, B, they've already said he's lied to them because mm-hmm. it's far greater extent than he originally revealed. And so, I mean, is he really bringing that much to the table for CNN that they would keep him?
Yeah, that's the thing. His ratings are, yes, the highest at CNN, but that's mostly due to his time slot. The 9 p.m. hour is always the highest rated hour for a cable network.
Yeah.
I can't see why they couldn't replace him with someone else. And I meant to bring this up yesterday when we were talking about this story. This is not the first time that Chris Cuomo has used his position at CNN
yeah.
to influence news stories.
I saw your column yesterday. You said he's a repeat offender.
He's a repeat offender. When he was interviewing Michael Cohen, former Trump attorney, about hush payments to Stormy Daniels, he had a phone call prior to the interview and was actually advising Michael Cohen on how to answer media questions about the story.
He was coaching his guest before the interview and basically, yeah, I'm going to ask you this. You should say that.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. We know because we have the leaked audio. Tucker Carlson played it on Fox News at the time. This was back in, yes. I believe, 2018. So he's a guy who inserts himself into the news. He manipulates coverage and he is a repeat offender.
So I guess the bottom line here is if CNN wants to continue to pretend that they're a news network, they should fire him and go in a different direction. If they don't, well, we know what CNN is, or at least now they're acknowledging what CNN is.
Well, it looks like, according to Brian Stelter's statements and the fact that it was an indefinite suspension instead of, you know, a specific timeline or
yes.
just an hour of firing, they're waiting for the media coverage to cool off and then he'll be quietly slipped back
That's
into
exactly
that time slot.
What it is. Yeah. It's 6:42 on
to the WMAL Fisher House Radiothon. Call to donate 888-294-8560.
Yeah, it's Larry O'Connor alongside Amber Athey on this, the first day of our Fisher House Radiothon. And I do want to remind you that every donation you make right now generously, and we are so grateful for every level of donation you give us, whatever you give us, it will be doubled by our friends at Leonardo DRS. They've got the Leonardo Challenge. The first $50,000 will be doubled. So please double your donation now at 888-294-8560. All right, Amber, let's take our time here because we have a great story to share about Fisher House and about another incredible hero who gave his life for our nation. Robbie Hammett joins us now, and her son was one of the first casualties of the Afghanistan conflict. Mrs. Hammett, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to hear from you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tell us, what was your son's name?
Jeremy. And if I may clarify, he was a casualty due to injuries, and he's still with us.
Oh, I am so sorry. I had
no problem.
Bad info. Thank God. Okay. Well, that's all, yeah. Already this is getting half of your story. Holy Moses.
Story.
I am so sorry. Thank you.
No problem.
Tell us what happened with Jeremy, though. You send your son off to war when we invade Afghanistan, and you must have been, you know, very nervous for him.
Well, we actually didn't know that he had gone because it was immediately following September 11, 2001. And so operational security, and he was a sergeant, and we had kind of a code, and then he was calling like every two or three days after the 11th. And then he called me and he said, "This is the call I never wanted to make." And it was the last call. And it wasn't but maybe 2 weeks later that the Army officer was at our door about 5 a.m. And he had a paper copy of an email and requesting that we call the Department of Defense, and they gave us the information regarding, as he'd been in a vehicle accident, but he was critically wounded.
And oh my God, that the knock on the door, right? And you look through the window, and there's an officer standing there. So he was critically wounded, and how soon did it take for you to see him and be by his bedside?
You know, he was wounded right outside of Afghanistan and kind of a makeshift base, and flown to Turkey. By the time this officer came to us, I think he had like half a dozen surgeries, and he was in Turkey. So they then moved him to, I think it's Landstuhl Medical Center in Ramstein, Germany. Mm-hmm. And that was where they determined his case to be terminal. And the Army actually flew us to Germany, and we spent one night at the Fisher House there. And it was just incredible that there was a scheduled medevac flight going back to the States the next day. And the doctors in the intensive care at Landstuhl said that's our only chance. So my husband and I joined people that had been waiting for this flight, you know, military personnel scheduled to go back for health care. And it was pretty incredible. The ambulance brought Jeremy in with his ICU nurse and respiratory therapist and life support machines, and every machine had a battery, and they hooked it up, and it was just incredible to watch the apparatus and the personnel that were all paying total attention to my son.
So weird. Sorry,
I'm sorry
to interrupt you.
No.
So they brought him back to the United States, and which was he at Walter Reed when you came back to the U.S.?
He was, and that's where we really kind of, Fisher House became home for us. My husband and I were able to stay throughout his recovery, and actually it was like the week of Thanksgiving that we flew home. And, I don't know what we would have done without Fisher House, because we were in a totally strange place, you know, just waiting for the next doctor's, you know, report.
And at this point, you're told this is a terminal injury. You're going to lose your son. You're going to lose Jeremy.
Correct. And the doctors in D.C. actually pretty quickly began being encouraging. And there was a point, I think amazed was an appropriate word. but the big thing was, it was such a fight for him to regain any strength, and both femoral arteries had been severed. It was kind of, well, we know it as a God thing, because it was a vehicle accident, and he was impaled on a water trailer, some of the mechanisms. And so, but in that penetrating his body, there was really no damage to any life-providing organs. He ended up with a colostomy, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you saw him today, you'd see a fine, healthy young man, and amazingly, father of a beautiful 6-year-old. We just feel like miracles happened on our behalf.
Thank God. I love that it's a God thing. Amen. It's a God thing, Robbie Hammett.
And And
I just love the fact that through all of that, you know, mom and dad are right there by Jeremy's side, and Fisher House gave you the home. Fisher House gave you everything
very
that
much
you needed, and it only happens through donations. In fact, you know that better than anyone, because now you're helping to fundraise for the Fisher House in New Orleans near your home. So
yes, and a brand new facility I think they opened during the COVID
during the pandemic
protocols and what have you. Correct.
Well, thank you for everything that you have done, Robbie Hammett, your son and his service and your continued service by continuing to raise money for Fisher House. I thank you for your story, and thank God Jeremy's alive. I'm so sorry. What a terrible, terrible mistake I made. So thank God.
Oh, no, it's understandable, with the terminology and what have you. And it is, we are very much blessed.
Thank you,
Robbie. That he is. And just as a side note, his little brother retires after 22 years in the Army this month. So.
Wow.
Boy, you did something right raising these boys. That's great.
Well, their dad and I worked hard, but they've made their choices, and I am incredibly proud of them. Totally.
So are we.
Thank you.
So are we.
Thank you so much.
Robbie Hammett, listen, I can't say it enough. When you call 888-294-8560, your donation goes to women like Robbie Hammett, goes to a mom like that who is going through such grief and worry and sorrow for her critically wounded son. And just look at what ends up happening because of those donations. Please, please, whatever you can give, 888-294-8560.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.